We'll take, well, we can't take a break. We got too much to do. We got Ed DeRosa, we got Andy, and we've got Seth Merrow over the next hour and 3 minutes. Ed's standing by, so let's get Ed in here for a spot. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I didn't mean to make you sit there 10 minutes. But
oh, always a delight to hear you and Sid talk shop and Breeders' Cup and Stallions.
Well, we're going to quickly dive into the week past, and you know these midweek visits have been very productive, and that includes you getting out in front of that Run Happy dropper for Nick Zito last week, and it also was part of what I think was a big bet share score.
Yeah, it singled in the pick six and thought we had a free score elsewhere, so happy to make the most of it. A couple of the spread races ended up chalking out too, so you know, the usual what could have been, but happy to connect on the Run Happy progeny. And you know, I think that was one of those situations, Steve, if that were an Asmussen or Ward trained horse, probably would have been odds on, but you still get the Hall of Famer tightening the girth. And you know, I thought 8-9 to 5, whatever it ended up being, was good value. And I'm definitely going to be bullish on some of these Run Happies dropping into maiden claimers. Certainly understand why a lot of them started for, you know, the full price, so to speak, in maiden special weight races, but it's unreasonable to expect any stallion to have nothing but maiden special weight horses. So I think some of these are going to find their friends, and I'm going to hopefully be there to cash.
Nice. And you know, you speculated on that last week, and you said that that this could be a formula for, you know, for some breakthrough wins. And you know, after a couple of different difficulties regarding the start, and as has been pointed out by, you know, some people that can understand the development curve of young horses, Run Happy himself was not overly precocious, and why there was supposed to be, you know, instant he was supposed to be an instant, you know, precocious type stallion, kind of a strange, you know, suggestion. And so, you know, people that are, you know, speculating that he's a disappointment, it's a little unfair. Maybe the expectations were just way out of whack. And of course, those expectations were fueled by, you know, the unusual approach to his marketing.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, he was all over, and still don't understand why people have an issue with that, but that's a separate topic. And you know, hopefully what we've seen this year from Swiss Skydiver and She Dares the Devil is a recipe to give some of these stallion owners some pause before giving up so quickly. And you know, Run Happy has a lot of numbers, and you know, certainly for those shopping at the sale now and over the next few months, might be an opportunity to get one on the cheap, because, you know, down the road you have a Swiss Skydiver type by Run Happy, and you look like a genius. So
you got to be patient.
It's all price dependent, just whether you're at the sale or betting. You know, you got to demand value.
Well,
there might be some now.
And you also need to, you know, be patient. And
right.
If you know, you don't have to get your investment back in two starts. I mean, that's a maxim that'll never go away. Some thoughts. we got a lot of horses that ran this weekend again. There wasn't as much action, but we got quite a number of horses that, you know, are going to make their next start in the Breeders' Cup. Ed, what did you come away with from, particularly from Belmont and Keeneland?
Yeah, I thought the Jockey Club Gold Cup was interesting. I mean, you know, we'll see what Happy Savers Connections decide to do. But, you know, an undefeated horse, and I saw someone ask, and I never saw the answer, if this was the first ever undefeated winner of the Gold Cup. I thought that was a pretty good question. But he's certainly interesting. And looking ahead to the Classic, Steve, one thing that I think is a factor this year more than other years, with the sort of week delay, so to speak, to accommodate Notre Dame's schedule. But that truncates the time between the Breeders' Cup and the Clark, which is sort of that last chance at a grade one around two turns in the U.S. And it is interesting to me what I think certain connections might decide to do vis-a-vis those two races. Our Collector comes to mind, a horse like Happy Saver as well. So certainly going to be watching what the trainers say and plotting our strategies for Breeders' Cup. But I definitely left that race being more impressed with Happy Saver than I was going in.
I was impressed as well, and as Mig pointed out yesterday, coming up inside and getting through, and for a horse that's relatively lightly raced, he's showing different dimensions. He's obviously a talent. There's probably a lot to ask yet, depending on on what's going on going forward. That was. In a lot of ways, that result was sort of what all the people that are against Tacitus, no matter what he tries to do, they were rewarded, I guess.
Well, I still had to find the winner, which I didn't. So, that's part of handicapping is knowing you got beat with your thought, and like I said, I was impressed from the race and been taking a look. Some of the overseas markets for the Breeders' Cup, and I mean, I can't believe by my standards is 30-1 in some spots. Is he the most likely winner? Hard to make that argument, but I think that's a fantastic price. And then I saw Sister Charlie was floating around 16-1, and I haven't given up on her yet. I'm hoping she does show up in the entry for Woodbine Sunday, and we'll see what happens from there. But I think you and Sid were talking about, I think there's going to be some opportunities in this Breeders' Cup. I'm not sure what we have, pure superstar-wise. That might come on Friday, with the Jackie's Warrior or Princess Noor, those type of performances from the two-year-olds. But I think the competitiveness of what we'll see on Saturday makes this a pretty exciting wagering prospect.
Very, very impressive, and as I don't know what else a young horse is supposed to do to arrive at Cup as a very deserving favorite. I'm sure, like me, you were thrilled for Tim Ham to get his first grade one.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, and I was. Kind of surprised he hadn't snuck one in there. Too Much Bling comes to mind, which I'm not sure even ever won a grade one lifetime, but he certainly had his share. And I guess, just kind of a recency bias to make this comparison, but sort of reminds me of what we've read and heard about Tommy Drury, someone who has won a lot of races, knows how to work a condition book on his local circuit, but also has had his hands on a lot of good horses that people may not realize that he had a hand in at some point in their career. So, great to see that TDN in the workout lines of a grade one winner at Belmont, and certainly a story I'm looking forward to following when they ship down 71-75 for the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah,
a drive you've made yourself.
Very, a number of times. Tina and I have a very funny, private joke about 71 about coming in. We were coming into Columbus late at night after Derby, and I'd sort of fallen asleep, and I woke up literally as she was coming up, and she's like, which way do I go? Which way do I go? And I look up and I said, 71. And so now whenever there's, a decision to make on a highway, we look at each other, 71.
For my life, I've spent at least 6 months, and now that I moved to Louisville, 3 years here. But all four of the major cities on 71, I've lived for at least 6 months. So
that's funny.
Definitely the interstate of my life for sure.
Oh, pretty funny. The Keeneland week. Now we shift gears, of course, and there's still stakes action. But right now, I think we're kind of focused on, some of the other activities. And, of course, you never know when a horse like Nashville is going to turn up here at this point on the calendar, right?
I mean, I guess, you know, people say, like, you know, get up every day and getting a horse like that in the barn. Obviously, Steve's had a few and nothing new. But, I mean, I think one of the more amazing things about this game is it just never gets old. I mean, to see a horse like that and to have your jaw drop. And I wasn't there for the debut. Few were, unfortunately, with, you know, no fans at Saratoga. But, man, if you've gotten to see that horse in person, I would consider yourself lucky. And we'll see what they decide to do from here. But, I mean, just breathtaking, really.
Yeah. And, you know, now immediately being considered, and it seems based on what Steve Asmussen said with us the other morning, you know, he doesn't seem, you know, chomping at the bit to get you know, to get him into Breeders' Cup. But you know, if he's doing well, you know, what's to hold you back, you know?
Right. Well, I agree. Yeah. I mean, and that's, to me, one of those situations where, I mean, if Steve decides to go, I mean, he's just one of those trainers, you know, you can trust he's there for the right reasons. And if he doesn't, then, you know, other opportunities. But, I mean, that's exciting to think we might see him in a race like that.
Well, and I'm trying to convince Dale to turn Mr. Freeze back, too. So maybe get
to
that confrontation.
Dirt mile?
From the dirt, instead of the dirt mile, turning back to the
all the way
sprint.
Okay.
I think he's interesting as a turn back for the sprint.
Mm. Well,
I think we got Dale thinking about it. That came out today too. Ed, let's dive in. Let's get some opinions in here about today, tomorrow, Friday. Do it again. Everybody, you know, once you hit. And of course, James had got his got back on track himself with his last minute Friday push. That was good too.
Yeah.
At 6-1.
Well, I'm sticking with the nightcap today, and I took a long look, and this is a price play, not quite the singleton fired out with last week, but I really like doubling Yin's money today in the nightcap. For whatever reason, I mean, I guess you look at the PPs and say that they're thinking turf, but, you know, Tail the Cat out of Mr. Greeley, certainly, to me, a pedigree that can go in any number of different ways, and actually gets to stretch out a little bit from turf sprints that it's been running in. And the claiming race three back at Louisiana Downs was definitely one of its better races. So this seems to find a spot that fits. And I just think 10-1's the right price to take a shot on doubling Yin's money. My comment on the Keeneland site was a rare Ireland, Western Pennsylvania name mashup, but, I think the price is right. I mean, this group just is not one to get excited about and, you know, take a little bit of a gamble on a horse doing something different finally.
I like it. And Eric Heitzman, certainly capable. They got a nice New Orleans tie in there with Mitch Merle, too.
Yeah, bet Mitch get rich.
I saw the tweet.
He's been riding well. The ROI is robust the last couple of months, so he's making the most of his opportunities. I think it's I'm pretty chalky, admittedly, throughout most of the card. But yeah, this was one I've, you know, taken a long look at the nightcap, and you know, just, I mean, it's $15,000 maiden claimers, and just think this one has the look of one who's already run races that's good enough for this group and maybe has a chance to jump up, going from 5 to 6 furlongs and getting under.
Anywhere else? You got that second level allowance, the sprint, Lexi on the move, kind of, you know, looks a little bit like a beach ball. What are your thoughts elsewhere?
Yeah, and the feature, I went with Mitch again, actually, Call on Mischief, but also, like, Perfectly Clear a little bit, who is, you know, the prior just didn't work out. But looking at her previous wins right before that, when they decided to take the plunge, thought Perfectly Clear ran really well, you know, professionally pressed the pace, got a 103 E2 versus that pace rating. So nice middle move there, like Bejarano getting aboard. And then Call on Mischief, another one who, you know, the stake company was maybe a little deep for her. I thought it was interesting that they kept trying to turf sprint and caught a couple off the turfs there. But now ships back in for Stidham, and I just like the try here at 6 furlongs on the dirt against this group. You know, I think those mid-Atlantic turf sprinters are pretty, it's a pretty salty division in the mid-Atlantic, and I think people may not realize that as much here at Keeneland, and 5-1 seems like a right price on Call on Mischief.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll, I think the money will spread between her and Lexi on the move. This is a good group. And there's probably some in here that you know, that'll keep moving forward next year. That'll end up, you know, filly and mare sprint division. There's potential to, you know, keep improving. There's a three, you know, late in the season for a 3-year-old restricted company. What else we got?
Tomorrow in the Sycamore, I'm expecting Zayed for Motion to take money. Was just above even money, almost 6-5 in the Canadian International last year. Motion gets LASIK. I mean, all the things that you would expect to take money in an international horse in this spot. But I think Red Knight hopefully will get overlooked because of it. 3-1 on the morning line. Aquaphobia is 5-2, so we'll see how the betting actually goes. But Kentucky Downs horses running great at Keeneland per usual. Just a steady diet of triple-digit Brisnet speed ratings. Has a second at Keeneland, has a win at the distance. To me, if Zayed, if they go crazy again and we're talking, you know, 7-5, 3-2 on him, I think Red Knight's going to be the right price here.
Yeah, I can't argue. Red Knight 3-1. I had Shug yesterday. Shug likes North Dakota in this spot. He thinks it's a good spot for him.
All right. Yeah. No. You know. No. Certainly no disrespect to a group stakes winner and a horse who, you know, ran well shipping into North America last year, but you know, just based on the betting it took there and. I agree that it'll be the favorite. I agree with the line Mike made in that regard. So hopefully some other opportunity on the other runners with basically almost full field.
There's any number of options in here. Aquaphobia, of course, you know, coming back, and I was there for the United Nations performance, which was a heart, just an absolute rip my heart out because I had come back to Parrette after a big score with him. And he almost, I thought he was a winner mid stretch. Tell you, Maker's other player in here. That Big Agenda's okay. This is really a fun group, and this is always a fun race.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and Matt's horse on the rail. You know, was third in this race last year with Leperu, who stays aboard. Another one who was in the Kentucky Downs race attended the pace. That Red Knight was in, and this is definitely a good group, and not one I'm looking to chalk out. I mean, if you love Zayed, then I would say single, not a situation where you would want to go deeper than him if that's your play. But if you don't think he's you know, an even money shot, then this is a chance to maybe spread a little bit.
It's a good card tomorrow, and the pick five starts with a maiden special and three and ups on the dirt. Then it goes into a turf sprint, an allowance, second level, back on the main, 1 3/16. First level, some familiar names like Let Me Know and Hunt the Front and Spa City and more. Really good. Then the Sycamore, and it ends with a non-2. I'm going to take a swing at the late action tomorrow myself.
Nice. Well, hopefully don't leave buttered noodles off in the line.
I like buttered noodles.
That's some speed. It's always dangerous to me at these these levels, you know, even though it's only run once against winners, but as a turf sprint, so.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2, and the action never stops. Twinspires.
I hope
and,
not.
Right? And there's always.
Can I get one more plug in?
Yeah, of course.
We just posted late last night, but I sent out the link today. But we have Breeders' Cup contender PPs.
Oh,
and,
good.
Many, many, many thanks to James Vance and Kelly for doing the work to make sure they're as up to date as possible with the right names, et cetera. But we'll be updating them until the pre-entries come out. And if you get them now from BristNet, there's no charge for pre-entries. So those looking to get a head start, have at it.
Excellent. I'm glad you mentioned it. The early look and get a feel for the groups. I'm keeping track too, and there's now we're at the point where there's daily news about the horses either participating or not. Ed, thanks so much. I'm enjoying these Wednesday visits.
I am too. I appreciate you having me on, Steve.
Not at all. Ed DeRosa, everybody. EJXD2. BristNet and all their information, as well as everything at Twinspires. We're going to stay here. Andy's going to join us, and I'm sure we're going to have that. Part of the conversation is going to include those two incidents and the non-call in that nightcap on Monday, and then the non-starter at Keeneland. It's funny because and Sid brought it up too, that I kind of riffed on a little bit early this morning, right when we started. Andy Sterling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
We're good. Good. Until you brought it to my attention, my first reaction always on non-starters declarations is, oh, they're protecting the better. But you had a different angle on it, and upon further review, you're not wrong.
Well, I mean, you're talking about the race team. I don't think it's really appropriate for me to go on your show and sort of criticize whether tracks handle things. And I have not seen the
sure.
rule or read the rule. So, you know, for all I know, they're following the rules. I just, you know... If somebody's following the rules, then it's not the fault of the person who followed the rules, but the fault of the rule. And just because something's a rule doesn't mean it shouldn't be changed. And obviously, what happened in the last race at Keeneland, and for people that aren't familiar with it, a horse broke significantly behind the field. What do you think, about 4 or 5 lengths? Does that seem right, Steve?
Yeah.
Horse who was favored 2-1 and, you know, sort of ran this remarkable race, you know, relatively speaking, to finish second, but lost by 5 1/4 lengths. So the likelihood that would have won is fairly slim, but you never know. The horse is broken. And it was declared a non-starter. But a couple of things come to mind. First of all, what if it had won? Suppose the horse that won the race wasn't in the race. Would they declare a horse that was clearly, significantly the best, that despite... And let me just add, the... break, they ruled it was a non-starter because the gate didn't open.
Right.
So it wasn't one of those situations where a horse breaks through the gate early and is disqualified because it got an unfair advantage. That makes a certain amount of sense. Whereas this was the fault of the racetrack, not looking to point a finger at anybody. These things happen. Things happen. There's a million things go wrong, and I'm not looking to blame anybody in any way for what happened. That's just, unfortunately, part of being involved in horse racing, betting, and such. But nonetheless, it wasn't the fault of the horse, and it wasn't the fault in any way for people who bet. So the horse had won. Would they have really declared that horse a non-starter, despite the fact that clearly the horse was the best horse? And in finishing second, it kind of finished where it probably would have. And what about people that bet this race? The Exacta, the tries, the supers, I mean, place bets, show bets, whatever, you know, and unfortunately, and I'm not saying there have to be best case scenarios, and sometimes those best case scenarios are not always going to work in the better's favor, but I'll give you a recent example, and I'm not saying we do everything right at NYRA, but you'll often hear that criticism of if one half of the entry scratched, the other half runs for first money only. And obviously, when it's the weaker half that gets scratched and the strong half wins, it's extraordinarily frustrating. There's no doubt about it. It's happened to all of us. We've also gotten placed, you know, with our bets on a favorite that we didn't like, and that's also frustrating. But, you know, the other day, a 3-5 was scratched the gate, and it was clearly far and away the stronger half of the entry, and, you know, so the public was served by that happening. I think it was that Jorge Abreu horse. It was about 2 weeks ago or whatever. So, right. You know, it does always work against it, and I understand we're resulting with the Keeneland story, and it just feels like I don't know what justice was served in this situation. And, you know, to be clear, so that it's not picking on the racetracks, I think if you were to look at three specific decisions by our stewards, starting with opening day at Saratoga and ending on the last race on Sunday, I think you'll look at three separate situations that all, in and of themselves, each one, you could defend the decision made by the stewards. I don't think any one of them was specifically horrible. But you can't view all three together and say that the consistent decision was made. And I know that people want consistency, and I think it's important to note that I've always felt there was consistency in Nyer. Now there were some changes in the booth, and there are two different people in there, and I found them to be some inconsistency here because a horse was taken out opening day price talk. Because, and justifiably, came out the stretch and he banged into another horse. I don't have any problem in isolation. They deemed that he cost that horse a potential placing. Okay, fine. Not an argument. Closing day, a horse came out severely in the stretch, plowed into another horse, knocked that horse off his stride, and he wanted to win the race. There was a long inquiry, and they left him up, and they said he didn't hinder that other horse from having a chance to replace him. I don't know how you can judge that. I don't know. He just plowed into him. Yeah, the horse probably wasn't going anywhere. But these absolutes are difficult. And I got those two in isolation. There was a little bit of a gray area there. Okay, these things happen. But then there's the situation on Sunday in the last race where the eventual winner of the race herded out the other horse 4 or 5 paths, made some contact, clearly impeded that horse's forward progress, so he definitely prevented him from winning. But ultimately, when he got nipped at the wire for second, absolutely cost the horse second. No question about it. Considerably more egregious than the one at Saratoga, in my opinion. But a very similar type situation. Yet this one was left up. And as you know, I've been a big defender of the stewards and their consistency in the past. I've said this on Twitter. I may not agree with their decisions, but I find them to be relatively consistent. It's rare that you would see an inquiry and not have a fairly confident judge of how the stewards would rule. I don't think that's the case if you were to take all three of these situations together. And I think that becomes problematic. I'm not obsessed by stewards' rulings, as you know. They're infrequent.
Yeah.
And for the most part, they're fair, right? But these three don't sit well together. And it's important for not just the connections of horses, but also for the bettors. You know, just as that situation at Kentucky Downs with the declared non-race, you know, the whatever, the reason.
Yes, yes.
They did the best thing for everybody in a way. They didn't do the best thing for everybody. They did the best thing for the greater good. Maybe that's comparable to a purse money only with a scratch. Unfortunately, the group that's been forgotten about in that Kentucky Downs race is the group that had winning bets. Now, there is a reasonable argument that they won a different race than was supposed to be run. But nonetheless, there were a lot of people that thought they had the winner, the exacta, the try, the super, et cetera, that got their money back. And if you're one of those people, you probably didn't feel as though some great justice was done. Now, that's one of the hazards of playing the horses, and I don't know that there was any way they could have done this differently unless they decided to pay out the entire pool themselves, you know what I mean, and take a huge hit. So these are risks in playing the horses, but all of these things, some avoidable, some not, it is important to understand that it is bettors that take it on the chin in these situations, as well as the connections and trainers. And, you know, you think about the connections to get their horses ready. They bring them over. They run their races. They exert the effort, and all for naught. And these are frustrating, and that's part of what makes the game frustrating. But it's understandable why bettors get frustrated. And while I feel like a lot of complaints can sometimes border on irrational on Twitter, and there's a lot of preposterous conspiracy theories that take away people from their time they could spend actually understanding the game better, and they just go off onto these grassy knolls. But nonetheless, events like this all contribute to our general paranoia. And to me, those three decisions at NYRA are a puzzling sequence of inconsistency. And that bothers me more than whether I agree specifically with one call or not, because I think it's fine to agree or disagree with the stewards. They have their opinions and we have ours. It doesn't make us right and them wrong. They see it in a different manner. But when there starts to be an inconsistency, then you start to wonder, you start to have more questions. That's all.
No, well, fabulously framed. And, you know, when you fold in the way these are treated, and I made this point earlier this morning, one of the difficulties that exacerbates the atmosphere is that the vast majority of response publicly is going to be on the negative side. I mean, there's
and so,
well, and we understand. I completely understand the why of that. However, it's not good for everybody's collective sensibility and collective experience, because it provides this atmosphere that pervades that everything is terrible and everything is everything that happens in the game is wrong. It's like, wait a minute. As you always point out, when there's a close call, like a real 50-50 or a 45-55, people say, "I was cheated," and you always say, "Well, wait a minute." What about the people who weren't "quote unquote" cheated? Because
there's always a lot of people that were cheated that weren't involved at all.
Exactly.
It's like the whole world had Al Abuse in Saratoga. The worst was 7-1. Based on, and this was long before the internet, based upon what you heard, the worst was like 3-5.
Very funny.
Everybody's always happy to raise their hand and say, "I got screwed too." Because, you know, we're horse players. And, all of us have been horse players for a long, long time. We've definitely gotten screwed here and there, or we perceive ourselves to have gotten screwed. And, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, some of us we love about horse racing is there's so many ways for us to complain and so many things to complain about. I think also it's interesting to note that the incident at Keeneland and the incident at Belmont were both the final race of a 5-day week.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hard, you know. Decisions, and I'm not saying that the wrong decision was made at Keeneland, because once again, I haven't seen all the rules, and perhaps they follow the rules, and I would assume to a T. But sometimes rules need to be changed. And this is one that I think bears scrutiny, and sometimes you have to have an event to happen for people to say, okay, now I see the flaw of this. And I do think it's important to ask the question on that particular one, what if the horse had won?
Well, of course, the arbitration on this will be done by Pat Cummings. So
I'm sure he's got it a full overdrive. I mean, you should have him on the show. You could probably have a 3-hour segment with him. Maybe
exactly.
Maybe you can have a 4-hour show that day.
plenty of
offer commentary afterwards.
Oh, I imagine. Plenty of racing occurred that was not controversial, and unless you count Tacitus as controversial.
No, poor Tacitus.
Yeah,
he was not good this weekend. This was supposed to be his moment, and he said no thanks. At a certain point, even people like me have to admit that while the naysayers are overboard, they're not totally wrong.
Can you think of a horse in recent memory that has had this? I mean, it's an albatross.
Hidden Scroll has created a lot of unfortunate circumstance. But
yes, and there was social inclusion? Wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about him. Remember Chad had him very briefly, right?
Did he?
One or two races, I feel like.
Yeah, trying to get him.
Yeah. He could have been very good. Was he the favorite in the Wood Memorial?
He might have been.
Who won that Wood?
Top of my head, Toby's Corner.
No, Toby's Corner would be Uncle Mo.
Oh, that's right. But it's what, 20, this is probably 2015?
At the most, right? Let me take a look.
All right, you're good for that. In the meantime,
I won't be able to because I'd have to go to whatever. It's not worth it. somebody will tweet it to us.
Yes, they will. Someone will tweet it for us. And but I remember being in Florida when he.
Oh, Wicked Strong?
Maybe.
I think it was Wicked Strong.
It was Wicked Strong. Look at you're unbelievable. You are unbelievable.
That's about the least impressive thing I'll do today. It's 5 years ago.
With the great Rajiv Marah piloting him home to a resounding. Who was second that to be between them? Rick Violette for Len Reggio.
For Len?
Yeah.
Who?
Samrat.
Oh, Samrat was. Oh, interesting. Well.
FNX was eighth.
FNX was coming off that huge allowance win. I think he was coming back. Was he coming back on particularly short rest off of an allowance win? That big allowance win at a huge price. And he was a much bigger price than he should have been. How far away off was he coming? He had a big win, by 8 lengths or something in his prior race, and a giant price.
And it was only, it was March, it was only about less than 2 weeks before that, March 23rd.
Yeah, right, there you go. See, he came back from short rest, But that was sort of when he kind of, that allowance race, because did he win the Albany?
Later in the summer.
Yeah. He's a good horse. Funny, FNX, Jimmy didn't have him at the time.
No. Joe Parker.
Having FNX.
Wouldn't Joe Parker have had him?
Very possibly. I don't know. There were quite a few listed trainers for that horse. Maybe Joe didn't have him.
But we know who was really training. Not that Joe can't train. He won by 6.25 at 28-1 in that allowance race.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Actually, David Smith was listed that day.
Yeah, that makes sense. David Smith,
as the trainer. Yeah, poor FNX, and very unfortunate. Got sick the way he did.
What else? Do you want to talk about the races this weekend, or you want to reminisce about New York Reds?
You absolutely can do either. Let's talk about the two-year-olds. I'm really anxious for your thoughts because this Jackie's Warrior, I mean, and that was impressive.
He's a machine.
Scary.
He's so good. I mean, obviously, the question that people will ask is another half a furlong, two turns. I don't see it. Honestly, it's very possible the second best two-year-old that's out there is Reinvestment Risk.
Yep.
And in a lot of years, he'd be a dual grade one winner, and heading into the Breeders' Cup is a real favorite. And he just gets drowned by Jackie's Warrior. He puts up a little bit of a fight, but Jackie's Warrior just destroys him. And he's very good. I mean, I think that's the other thing about Jackie's Warrior. When people are saying, who would they beat or whatever behind them, he might be beating the second best two-year-old pole we've seen. So He's extraordinary. He just keeps rolling along. He's a really, really, really good horse. Jeez. And I thought the Phillies, it's funny, David Aragona put that poll up yesterday, who people thought would win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Phillies, and I retweeted it. I enjoyed it, too. And they put up the Alcibiades winner, Simply Majestic. Ravishing. You'd have to think we favor, though I imagine the horse who won Saturday. I'm terrible with names. They Out of the Office?
Yes.
They Out of the Office, yeah. They should be buying from favoritism. And Princess Nora, of course, who's significantly slower on figures. And even if you think she's going to run a much better race, you're going to need all these horses to regress for them to lose to her. But, of course, she was an overwhelming winner of it. I don't know what. But, I mean, I'm not knocking Princess Nora, but she obviously hasn't been particularly fast. I mean, she did run her three races in a relatively short period of time, and now she'll have more time in this race, and she is trained by, you know, one of the great trainers of all time. So I'm not going to be shocked when she takes a step forward, but what happens if they Out of the Office, or even the second-place finisher, who ran extremely well to be second, or simply Ravishing? What if these horses, any or all of them, take another step forward? These are unusually strong two-year-old fillies. And the group going to last year's Cup was relatively mediocre. It's not that surprising that none of them had a real say in the three-year-old year. That is not the case this year. I don't know. I'm sure there have been some strong groups, but I feel like this is the first year that both the Alcibiades and the Frisette have three really good horses coming out of them. And, you know, the possibility exists that Princess Nora might be okay. She's obviously going to have to get faster, but she has every right to do that. And so this feels like a very competitive and good Breeders' Cup juvenile fillies. You know, a sort of dichotomous to the colts, where you're going to have Jackie's Warriors, the heavy favorite. I think this race, any of those four horses can win.
And then we don't, you know, there's also going to be any number of the, you know, the ones that might still be, you know, heading in the right direction.
I don't know if we're going to see any maiden breakers in that race. You rarely do, and I don't know what other races you want to highlight that horses are coming out of that are competitive with that group. That's a strong group, Steve.
No, it is. And you didn't. We haven't even talked about Dale's filly, that girl daddy.
Has she not run since the Pocahontas or something?
Yes. No.
What was her figure that day? Dale has a lot of freaks in his barn that run 50 buyers.
I might have it here. Hold on. I think I've got it right here in my stack of.
I read something about Dennis's Moment coming back. I really would love to see him come back well. I still do believe that he's a very good horse, and I like that they gave him so much time after the Fountain of Youth.
Girl Daddy has got the Girl Daddy got a 77 in the Pocahontas and Sitting on Go an 84 in the Iroquois.
Well, she'll have a lot of improving to do to beat this group.
Dale was on this morning, actually.
How is he?
Excellent, excellent.
I talked to Bailey the other day.
There we go.
Jake took over the conversation. It's a full family affair.
It is a family affair.
Jake was giving me a lot of suggestions on how we should be running Naira. I really appreciate it. It was really extremely.
Before I ask you about.
By the way, I'm running Naira.
Exactly. I do want to talk about turf fillies and mares, but let's also quickly fold in the two-year-olds that ran Sunday. Had Phil Gleaves. So happy for Phil Gleaves. What a nice week he had.
I've got him saddled the horse.
Yes.
Phil had a big week. Two stakes for Phil.
Yes, he did.
That was cool.
Did you? What is? You must have talked to Steve. What is Chris's plan? What's next for Tin White Duke?
Oh, Breeders' Cup, and then they're going to bring him into the Derby Fresh. He's going to run on New York Bay Showcase Day. Where do you think he's going to run? Sleepy Hollow. I mean, obviously he's running in New York Bay Showcase Day. Where else would he run?
Nice. No, I wasn't, you know, I just, Steve has been aggressive. He's been, he's flexing his muscles.
He's running the New York Red Races.
Well, nice. They're taking full advantage. The horse is made like $180,000.
Horse is made almost $200,000, right? Yeah,
yeah, crazy. Andy, I do want to talk about Tamahir, who looks like she could have, done whatever she wanted in there.
She was very impressive. I agree. There were trips behind her. Clement's horse had a trip.
McKay
had a trip. I mean, to be fair, I'm not knocking her. She was very good. But horses that make moves like that tend to get people excited. She was impressive. I don't disagree. You know, Chad Brown's very high on her with reason. I'll take a wait and see. I think she's very good. How good she is remains to be seen. I think it's hard to... She obviously won easily, but I always get a little reticent about races where significant players in the race got in real trouble in those races. And she got that good, clean outside run in the widener. And so I'm not knocking her in any way, but I would
wait and see.
Well, we'll see, you know. I mean, are they going to be aggressive and try her to race like the Matriarch? I suppose it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, will they take a more conservative approach and look to more towards next year with the Matriarch as a goal? Also very possible. She was good. We'll see. I'm not unimpressed by her, but I'm not as gaga over the whole race as maybe some others are. And I don't mean that to be critical.
Well, then let's fold in somebody you are gaga over. Harvey's Lil Goyle.
You know, it's funny. I was having this discussion on text with Tom Amos about her, because Tom thinks that after that race, she clearly showed she's a better turf horse than dirt horse. And I'm not convinced.
Either am I.
I asked Mott about it. We just talked about him for about 30 seconds. He seemed to be busy, or maybe he just didn't want to speak to me, which is not that I blame him for that. But I thought she ran great in the Alabama. And, you know, and I talked to Bill about that, and he and I totally agree, both of us agreed that, you know, in sort of trying to win, she was caught second. Not to say that Junior was wrong in trying to win, but making that aggressive, premature move, which he sort of had to try to do against Swiss Skydiver, ultimately it probably cost her second. If she had had the same ride as Solaris ran second, she would have been second. She still got like a 95 buyer. You know, one thing I would say about her on the turf, she does seem more comfortable. In some of her dirt races, she doesn't always break that sharply. Boy, in the turf, she comes out of the gate well, and she puts herself in these races, you know? So it is interesting, and I think if you look at that argument, you get a sense that she's a little more comfortable on the turf. And maybe, you know, maybe a 93 or 94 and winning a turf race is a little better than 95 and finishing second or third in the dirt. She is a super quality three-year-old filly, and if it wasn't for Swiss Skydiver, I mean, this is an unusual year. You've got Swiss Skydiver, and you've got Gamin, but you've also got some others around there. But she's an upper echelon horse and really a very, very good horse. And I think the fact that she can handle those services gives Bill Hamott so many different options with her. But how she was 7-2 in that race and Sweet Milani was 5-2 will remain a mystery forever. And by the way, there's an argument that the horse that finished second, Micheline, who beat her at Kentucky Downs and got fortunate to beat her, and I bet her at Kentucky Downs, so I'm not whining. But she not only got a great ride by Joelle, I thought that because of circumstance, she had a much better setup than Harvey's Lil Goyle that day. But I also think Harvey's Lil Goyle had a better trip than her on Saturday. I thought that Micheline was never in a particularly comfortable spot. So she's pretty good too, Micheline. These are some nice three-year-old filly turf horses.
Very much.
Maybe,
and
Magic, yeah, maybe Magic Illusion coming back in 3 weeks, second start in the country, cutting back. I don't think the cutbacks went hurt her because she got a very good trip in there. But Javier, I think Javier wrote her, gave her a perfect ride. I just don't think she ran that well. Sure, okay.
Yeah, she.
But the competition was much tougher in this race than it was in the. Than it was in the Belmont Oaks. I mean, geez, the horse that ran second, Mott rightfully scratched her out of this race to run her in the Valley View on Friday. He knew he wasn't winning that race with her. He knows that the winner, Harvey's Lil Goyle, is better than her.
Yeah.
Harvey's Lil Goyle's a really good horse. She's a horse that could have a very, very good 2021. She could compete in top races on both surfaces.
It's funny that you unprovoked, because I would have asked about the turf-dirt equation. I also, on Friday, when we were handicapping and having conversations, I said that same thing, that I'm not convinced that she isn't, you know, at least as good on the main. And you know, what a luxury. In Mott's care, I mean, there really could be a lot of fun, you know, fun things to play around with her next year.
Yeah, no, I think you look at the options, and races are coming up weaker, I think, on one surface or the other. I think Mott can run either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly. And she also, for Harvey, the late Harvey Clark, ends up having the distinction of being American Pharoah's first grade one winner.
Wow. Is that right? God, I haven't even thought of that. Right, because the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, rightfully so, isn't great.
Yeah, not yet. I don't know. Is this year three or year two? They had started it, then they stopped, and then they brought it back. So I don't think it's had.
I don't really pay that much.
Yeah, if it's had, I think this is the second. This might be the second year of it. Again, they did it at Santa Anita a few years ago, and then it sort of went away, and now it's back. A couple of things about Shug. He was with us yesterday. The civil union kind of—I mean, not that she couldn't win. I was a little, discounting of her, which was stupid on Saturday.
Well, and she, she's improved. She's done a great job with her. She also got very fortunate in there. You know, she just got a sensational trip and ride in there. Not to take anything away from her, but if Nene never had had more horse in the stretch, she never gets out of that hole because she keeps it closed. And what's her name wins? My sister Nat, who didn't have a bad trip either. She had a good trip too. She had a chance to win. The Boy Civil Union had a great trip. Yeah, Shug's done a great job with her. She just seems to get better with every start. And the fact that she's tractable has helped her, and sort of helped her by putting herself in position, though. Getting things to open up in the stretch, that helped it too.
They're pressing forward toward Breeders' Cup. Shug made it sound pretty clear that not pressing toward Breeders' Cup with Code of Honor. He's pointing toward the Cigar Mile, which he charmed me to death by calling it the Naira Mile yesterday.
No. Has he won it since he won it at the Naira Mile with Gold Fever?
Ooh.
Look that up.
Ooh, good question.
I'm glad he waved the Naira Mile. Good for him.
Yes, that's him.
I thought he ran terrific in the Kelso. I mean, honestly,
he did.
He lost because the other horse ran really well, but I don't think that takes away from his performance. You know, Kalexi's not in there. People are raving about his 106 buyer and his impressive win. And I think sometimes winners get so much more. Not that Kalexi didn't deserve a lot of credit for that, but I think that he should be given credit too, and Shug clearly did the right thing, giving him time since that race. Yeah, I saw he was pointing to that.
Well, and the answer to that question.
I actually thought he was a horse that would be interesting to look at in the Breeders' Cup at a mile and a quarter. I wonder if Shug feels that he's better going shorter at this point in his career. Maybe that's part of the whole thinking, because, it's a race that may be looking for some closers, and I don't, it's a competitive field. I don't think there's any monsters in there, do you?
No. Lots of good horses.
Yeah, you know, there's nobody in there that you go, oh my God, I can't beat him. Shug has not won since Gold Fever.
No. Barkley Tags won too, though.
He won with Jersey Town and, put up with Tail with Tati.
Yeah,
last time he ever ran a competitive race.
It's pretty funny. True. It took me.
Tail of Akati was a very good 3-year-old. It was just because he won the Wood. They ran him in the right races, but they were the wrong races. I still think there's a good chance he would have beaten Visionaire that day in the King's Bishop if they run him there instead of the Travers. But they sort of had to run the Travers. It wasn't Barkley's fault, that's for sure.
It's funny. I'm looking. I pulled up the Cigar Mile as well, and I noted that Gary Jones passing, and here's the Quiet American win 1990.
Yeah, I was talking about him with Jay Friedman yesterday, actually, because as many people remember, he was excluded by the Breeders' Cup for the Classic. And the connections were they were understandably wild. He could have won that year. He could have beaten Bridled in there. I think the horse they chose though was Ibn Bay over him. He did run second, but he came back a week later. I think the Meyer Mile was a week later back then. Boy, was he a good horse! And, of course, also this race was won by Connect 4 years ago. It was owned by, sadly, the late Paul Pomper.
I was going to – that was my next suggestion. So saddened. I mean, when the news came from his cousin Jerry and early Saturday morning. I mean, you're just dumbfounded. It's so unfair, Andy. I mean, he had just sold the business and was officially retired and was going to he loved the track.
Bad for many reasons, and it's sad. He was a wonderful guy. I mean, I know that, you'll hear a lot of times people, it's nice to hear people have nice things to say about people, and you sort of sometimes roll your eyes a little, not with Paul. I don't think you can find a person, at least around racing, I can't imagine anywhere that doesn't have nice things to say about him. He was such a nice man. He really was. I mean, the only reason I knew him was that he approached me years ago, I think when I first started at NYRA, because I used to love Backseat Rhythm.
Me too. That's how I got to know him.
And he said, you're Andy, you're a big fan of Backseat Rhythm, blah, blah, blah. And that's how we became friendly. And he just always had something nice to say. It was always a pleasure to see him. You hear the things that Todd Pletcher said about him and Chad Brown, both of whom had horses for him and some good, great successes. And I'm sure their share of failures as well. And I think what you heard from both of them was that Paul was extremely gracious in defeat. And it's not always easy. I think one of the toughest jobs for a trainer is, delivering so much bad news to owners and having to make those phone calls. And that Paul really understood and was a very thoughtful man. As Chad said, he always asked about my family first. And not because he was a phony, because he was genuine. And he actually had legitimate priorities, unlike the rest of us, don't always have our priorities right. I think Paul did. And it's a loss to the game, and obviously to a lot of people who are close to him. It was just so sad to hear that news. And, it wouldn't have been better, I guess, if he had been sick, but for it to happen so suddenly when, it was completely unexpected, it's so hard. And I feel so bad for the people that are truly close to him.
Now,
it's really a loss.
That's the part of it that is... he's had a couple of different rounds of cancer issues, and so for a heart attack to jump up out of nowhere and that's what was just that's what was to me stunning.
I'll tell you something that's telling about Paul. Look at Jerry, who's his, what is he considered, his cousin-in-law?
Yeah,
who's his stable manager. He's a wonderful guy. He's a really nice guy, right? I'm just an incredibly nice guy, very outgoing, really always good to see him and talk to him. Paul was somebody that surrounded himself with nice people, right? The people you met because of Paul were all people you were happy to see. It says a lot about him.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I see Jerry... throughout the year, because of contests and Vegas and so forth. And
it's always nice to see him. Something to
he's the greatest.
That was Jerry. Well, it was always nice to see him. He's a good guy.
Well, him and his brother, which is Tom. It's Tom and Jerry.
I don't really know him. I mean, I've met him, obviously, but I'm always a little more friendly with Jerry.
Well, they're just and Paul, Paul was so good to me, and came in and bought the controlling interest on Toy Cannon, and it was such an honor to campaign with him, and
But you think about how badly you feel, and ultimately you didn't even know him that well. Think about how the people who were truly
sure, exactly. Well, his boys and Alyssa and. It's going to be just terribly, yeah. Terribly missed. I mean, I thought Chad had beautiful things to say, about...
Yeah, I thought that tweet was very nice. Well, Todd said some really nice things about him on our show also.
Yeah, everybody, there's no... Well, the Gary...
A lot of the sentiments everybody. Were all very similar.
Yep.
Pat Reynolds as well.
Yep.
Obviously, no new Paul dealing with him in business as well as anyone. And Paul always had, Pat always had great things to say about him, you know.
And I brought up Gary was on with us, and they had success together, and Gary reminded me about Rene Araya, and
his original trainer was Rene Araya, right?
Yes, and then when Rene needed some help and to get sort of reestablished, Paul sent him half a dozen horses to get him back on his feet. I mean, that's the kind of guy that Paul was.
And, yeah,
it just. I was going to say it wasn't a good weekend, obviously, but it even transcends that. I mean, there's been just a parade of.
Well, this has nothing to do with to do with the racing or with the events.
No.
Or anything, but it's a more important thing. And it's just sad.
Yeah.
Lousy.
Yep. Exactly.
Well, I see you've managed to drag me all the way to the end of the show.
You've got a funny week. You don't go back till Friday.
Oh, it's hilarious. Well, we race 5 days. We race through Monday, and then I'm off next week. Hey, I'm not going to do your show next week.
Really?
I'm taking an official week off. Yeah, I think I won't do it for 2 weeks. So I guess it's okay that you made me stay out for 45 minutes.
Thank you.
I'm off the week of the 22nd to the 25th or something. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So we'll talk. We'll do. I'm glad you mentioned this. We'll look forward to maybe some Breeders' Cup opinions.
Maybe. Maybe not.
You're impossible, Andy Serling. Everybody, and what? What arrangements are there going to be? I think Andy's gone. Are you gone? He's gone. I was going to ask, what are the arrangements while he's on vacation? Not that there isn't a cast of thousands. I mean the America's Day at the Races show. I mean it's like rabbits out of the hat. As soon as you forget of somebody that was on, there's somebody else. Here's they just keep they just keep coming. Waves of visits. So, all right. We went 3 hours. Mark on the board today. We went 3 hours. We did not take a break. Crazy. Thanks to Mark and thanks to everybody. I will quickly I've got to put together, let me get either a cup of coffee or a cold drink, and I will write up the pick five at Indiana Grand. I want to thank Dale Romans, Kim Weir, Sid Fernando, Ed DeRosa, and Andy. Seth Merrow got left in the green room. Seth, I know you're listening. I'm sorry. We'll get Seth in maybe for Friday. Good luck today. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, The Best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.